Hey, beautiful people, and welcome to the Tell Me a Story podcast. I'm your host, Eric Bell. If this is your first time on the show, this is the kind of podcast where I have different people coming on and they tell me their favorite story. And buckle up, because these stories range. From the relatable to the intense to the traumatic, there is something for everyone here. And I know you guys will love these stories as much as I enjoyed hearing them myself.
Today, I had my buddy Shane Cervantes come on the show. I love this guy. He's a stunt performer, guys. And he looks at me, a stand-up comedian, is like, dude, you're so brave. I could never do what you do. You jump off a building, sir. You can easily do what I do. But they're a crazy bunch, y'all. They really are. And here's him talking about some of the things he loves to do in his day. Please, enjoy.
Yeah, sorry, dude.
It's all good, man. It's all good. It's all good. But you can hear me all right?
Do it. I can hear you, man.
Awesome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Shane, thank you for coming to Tell Me a Story, man. I'm glad to have you.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Man,
glad to be here.
Man, it's, you know, I was thinking about all the shitty jobs I've had. And the one thing I can say from, and I know a lot of people can relate to this, is that if you've ever had a shitty job, the only saving grace for those shitty jobs is sometimes you get solid friends out of it. And like, you're the only person who I still talk to from Chili Beans, which was
Chili Beans.
Yeah. For people who don't know, Chili Beans is a Brazilian sunglass company that operates out in the U.S., mostly in the West Coast, or at least when we were working there. And yeah, they had kiosks and everything. And they had a new store in the Irvine Spectrum.
Are they even still around?
I would be amazed if they are.
Because I haven't seen one. I mean, I haven't gone to the Spectrum where we worked in a long time, so I don't even know if they're still around.
I would be surprised. I know they lost a ton. They spread themselves too thin, and a lot of their kiosks and stores shut down. So now that everything's shut down, I don't know.
Well, and I mean, it makes sense when, you know, everything is, you know, there's only one of everything.
Yeah. I think I'm positive that they still have stores, because over at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club, like right next door to Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club at the
The Kodak.
Yeah. So that's there. No, the Kodak is near, So there's at least two.
It's right there across the street. It's over. Yeah. I've seen it there. Yeah. It's over by like CPK and mm-hmm. It's across the street in that little area.
Okay, well, there you go.
I know, yeah.
So they're still around. But yeah, man, like, that was the one thing I appreciated from Chili Beans. I got to meet you, and I met Natasha, who was, you know, on the show recently.
Yeah.
Man, but like, whew, that was a weird fucking job.
It was, dude. You know what's funny? Like, I'm trying to think, like, I don't really remember. I needed a second job because at the time I was working literally right across from Yard House. Yeah. And I needed a second job for some reason. I don't remember why. And I found – I think maybe I saw that it was going to open and that they were hiring. And so I applied. But then I had to go all the way out to L.A. to do this interview. And I'm like, I'm in Orange County, dude. Why do I have to go all the way out to L.A. for this interview? You know what I mean? And then I get stationed at the Irvine location with you and a bunch of other people. Gianna, Trinity.
Yep. Oh my God. Yeah. That was the funny part of, like, the one thing that I always take away from that job is we all got fired except for you.
Yep.
And you hands down were like late. You were the person who was late the most. You were the person who had the fewest. I was like, I remember they fired me for my negative personality.
Is far from negative.
Oh man, I like, just tell me you don't want me here anymore. Just don't give me some bullshit from negative. Those were her words. I was like, negative personality. What?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not even accurate at all. I don't know how they got. I don't know what happened there. But yes, I did quit because I was like, you know what? I mean, I didn't get fired because I quit. I quit literally what was like a week before everybody got fired.
Yeah.
It was like a week before everybody got fired because I was just like, man, I don't know, because I don't remember his name. But the general manager, the manager of that location, just didn't know what he was doing.
Oh, yeah.
The sales were all weird. The way they went about things were all weird because they were a brand new company in this new area. And I remember kept telling them, I was like, listen, like, you guys are going about this all wrong. You're expecting so much and you don't have, you're not understanding. You don't realize that, like, nobody knows what Chili Beans is. They think it's a food place. And so when people hear, oh, you Chili Beans, like, yeah, they're thinking, they're not thinking sunglasses and watches.
Yeah.
Nobody knows who you guys are out here. This company came in acting like everybody knows who they are already. Like they're freaking Ray-Bans or, you know what I mean? Like Nixon or something like that. It's like, nobody knows who you are in the US. You may be big in Brazil, but nobody knows who you are here. So they're, the expectation of sales that they wanted all the time was just astronomically nearly impossible.
Oh yeah.
And so like when we couldn't like, you know, make it happen, it was like, why can't you do this? It's like, dude, because nobody knows who the fuck we are. They think we're a food place that's selling chili beans, bro.
Yeah. I remember also getting one of those talks like, hey man, you guys got to get those numbers up. And I literally, I started sending him photos of our store being empty, like empty for like every half an hour. I was like, no one in the store, no one in the store, no one in the store. Oh, someone walked in. Someone used our store as a crosswalk.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. Cause it was a weird,
Corner store. So there was two entrances and it was like, oh, they were lazy. They didn't want to make the curve, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
typical Irvine people.
Yeah. And it, man, I was like, oh my God, I fucking hate this job. But like, I met you, man. And it was like, oh, okay. Well, he's cool. But anyway, man, you got a story for me?
Oh man. I got a lot of stories. Give me, you want a topic? Like, throw me a topic.
Okay, well, one of the things I find most interesting about you is that you're a stunt performer. So you got a stunt story for me?
Oh. I mean, yeah. So I'm a stunt performer. Obviously, you know, right now with COVID and everything, the only stunt I've been doing has been trying to apply for jobs. Considering, you know, there's no live performances going on or anything like that. In the stunt world, it's very interesting. A lot of people think, you know, I'll say this. The one question I always get, I hate getting asked is, what's the craziest stunt you've ever done? Or what's the scariest stunt you've ever done? It's like, or what's the most dangerous stunt you've ever done? It's like, okay. Here's the thing. First off, stunts are meant to be done safely. They're the most safe you're going to possibly ever be. They take that into account. There's a reason why it's happening. You know what I mean? They're not just going to be like, hey, jump from this platform over to that, you know, that other platform that's 7 feet away. And then there's a 20-foot drop with no safety. It's not going to happen. You're going to be hooked onto a harness of some sort. You know what I mean? Yeah. Obviously things like a stuntman or a stunt performer, like, you know, Tom Cruise goes to the insane extra mile with certain things. However, he's still very safe about it. You know what I mean? Like, he was injured in his most recent Mission Impossible. Remember when he like buckled his knee on that jump?
Yeah. Oof.
Or like he broke his ankle. Like, yeah, but he was still in a harness. You know what I mean? Like he fell short of the jump and he clipped himself. Injuries are going to happen. It's not if, it's when. If you're a stunt performer, it's when. Luckily for me, knock on wood, I haven't had any crazy major injuries. I've had like sprained ankles and stuff like that. But I have seen things happen to fellow performers in the industry. One of my buddies, I'm in the pirate show in Buena Park. It's the Pirates Dinner Adventure Show, where it's basically like medieval times, but it's pirates themed. So you have your blues, your reds, your yellows, your green pirates, kind of like your blue, yellow, green knights and stuff like that. But it's pirates themed. and you cheer for your, you know, your color and your pirate and whatnot. And there's competition modes. So in the competition modes, like certain competitions, yeah, some of the competitions may be a little rigged, keep the story flowing, and it changes. It changes every week. Like, okay, green's gonna win this competition this week. Yellow's gonna win this week. Red's gonna win this week. But that's to keep the story flowing, because the story, it's still a show. It's like a musical. So it's not, the story needs to be continuous. But during the competitions, there are certain games where it is real. I'm trying to actually win. I want to win. And I get very competitive. And along with the other guys get very competitive. So anything can happen. And that's when it gets really fun, because it's like you're in the middle of the show and it's like, who's going to win this game? We don't know. You know what I mean? And cool. So there is certain aspects to the show that it is real. We are actually competing. We are really trying to compete to win for your color. Anyway, a buddy of mine, I would probably say, like, this is one of the more – like pretty serious injuries that I saw, but it wasn't, he's totally fine. It just, I guess it looked way worse than it actually was, but he tripped and fell and he hit his head and he comes up. This was after the show, by the way. So this wasn't even during the show. Like, wow. We had already performed the show. It's like a 2-hour long show. He goes down below deck, below the stage to put some weapons away. He ends up tripping and falling and hitting his head. And he comes up and I hear it. I hear something downstairs. I'm like, what the hell is that? I didn't think anything of it. I was like, maybe drop something or something. He comes up holding his head. He's like, I think I'm bleeding. I hit my head. I was like, what? And I go and I look and I move his hair out of the way. Dude, blood everywhere. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, what happened? I was like, yes, you're bleeding, dude. Blood all over me, blood all over him. Like, it's bad. I was like, yes, you're bleeding. He's like, he basically just tripped and fell and hit his head on the corner of like some post or something. Complete accident. Like, wasn't doing anything. He just slipped. Like, this is a simple accident that could happen at like a restaurant or at Disneyland or at your home. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's at blame for anything that happened here, but it just happened. And that's the thing. So that it happens in stunt shows. You know, look at a show like Waterworld. There's videos on YouTube. I've never been in the Waterworld show at Universal Studios, but I know a lot of people, a lot of stunt performers and buddies and friends that are in that show and that have been in that show. And you can go on YouTube. There's videos on YouTube of people getting injured in the middle of the show. Have you ever seen those?
No, I haven't. I've seen the Waterworld show, but I never seen any of the bad injuries.
There's a couple that I know of that I know that are on YouTube, and you could check them out, and it's terrifying. But that just kind of gives you an idea of how live stunt shows are. Things will happen and go wrong, and you have to be fully prepared and trained for anything, any sort of scenario or situation that could potentially happen. Again, it's live theater. Anything can happen in live theater. You know, like people forget their lines or forget a piece of the music or the song they're singing, or maybe they come out too early and skip an entire scene in the show and throw everybody off. Things happen in live theater. Well, a live stunt show like Waterworld or Pirates or Medieval Times or, you know, whatever other stunt shows are out there, things can go wrong and people will get injured because the stunts that are being performed are dangerous.
Yeah.
They take a very certain set of skills to do. You know what I mean? And the people doing these skills need to be able to perform these back to back to back to back to back on a daily basis. You know, and so you have to be consistent with it. But unfortunately, sometimes errors happen. But if you go on YouTube, you could see videos of people getting injured, unfortunately. And they're pretty gnarly, dude, the ones at Waterworld. Because that show has been around for like, what, 25 years now?
Yeah, that's years? A staple.
It's been around for a long time at Universal. And Universal is a great company. Like I've worked with them for 10 years as a chainsaw performer for the Halloween Horror Nights every year. And it's a great company, but again, you know, things happen. But yeah, check out, there's a video of this guy. I think he shattered both of his ankles. He was supposed to rappel down in the show. And I think this was the old show. This wasn't the show that is run by Action Horizons now. I think this was WSSI, like an older company that third-partied the show through Universal. So this was a while ago, I'm pretty sure. But I'm not 100% with that. I don't know who it was. But there was an incident that happened, and it's on YouTube. You can look it up. Just type in, like, Waterworld injury or accident. I'm sure it'll pop up. And you see it happen. Like, that's the crazy part. Like, somebody's filming it out in the audience, and this guy was supposed to rappel down, and I don't know exactly what happened, but he rappelled down, came down way too fast, and landed way too hard and shattered his ankles.
Ooh.
And you see it happen. And everybody runs out. They throw the big X up in the air, like, stop the show. Everybody's trained in that show. All the performers are trained for, like, CPR and, like, you know, they get trained for, like, safety and swimming and saving people. And they get certified and all these different things. Again, I don't work for the show. I've never done it. But I just know this, like, based off of auditions and stuff and things that they would tell us at the auditions and friends that have been in that are in the show and that have been in the show. You get trained for all that stuff and you have to get certified and you get passed. So everybody goes through, like, an extensive, like, training. So when things happen, they know what to do. So yeah, there's a video on YouTube where this guy, yeah, shattered both of his ankles.
Yeah, so like,
things happen, dude.
Dude, and you're in the water.
Oof. In the water, like, there's a lot of elements. You know what I mean? So as fun as it may be, and as cool as it may be to see, you have to. I think people tend to forget that stunt performers, especially live stunt performers, yeah, dude, that stuff's not easy, man. Like, that's physically grueling. And it's funny, I'm not, like, super fit. I'm like a fit dad bod, I would probably say, for me personally. Like, I'm like a fit dad bod. Like, I ain't got no six pack. I got muscle underneath, but I don't got a six pack. I don't diet like super healthy. Like, if I want a cheeseburger from In-N-Out, if I'm going to get a double-double, I'm going to get a double-double with a shake, bro. I'm going to get a Neapolitan shake. I'm going to get cheesy fries. I'm going to get a double-double.
Damn. Like,
that's what I'm going to order. I'm not going to order some little hamburger protein style with a water. You know what I mean? Like
I'm flipping off of pirate ships. I'm going to get myself a goddamn shake.
I want food. Exactly. So, with that being said, I remember this one show, and so in the show that I'm in, there's times where, like, we kind of go out into the audience and interact. That's one really cool thing about the show that I do, is that we do interact a lot with the audience. And there was this one time, this guy was in my crew, he was in the yellow crew, and he was sitting right by, like, my bowsprit, which is, like, this tall, it's probably, like, 15, 20 feet. It's probably about 15, 17 feet up in the air. It's like this big ladder, and it's like this little tiny platform that I swing back and forth from. Mm-hmm. And I come up and down this ladder throughout the show periodically. And I remember at the end of the show, I came down from the ladder at the end of the show, and this guy was ripped, dude. This guy was, like, super fit, super ripped. Like, this guy goes to the gym. He's active. He's one of those guys, the six pack, maybe even an eight pack, like, ripped. This guy tells me, he's like, hey, man, I don't know how you do it. He's like, that's super impressive that, like, you could just keep going. And so for a guy to tell me that, it's like, dude, hey, respect. And I appreciate that, because it's like, yeah, I don't have a six pack like you do. But I can continuously move for 2 hours straight cardio, climbing a 40-foot rope ladder, swinging back and forth, sword fighting, doing trampoline stuff, all this stuff. And yeah, of course I'm tired. Like it's nearly impossible. It doesn't matter how fit you are to not be tired and sweaty. The fact that this guy even gave me props, I was like, hell yeah, dude, give me props. I appreciate that. You know what I mean? Cause right now I'm going to go have a beer and I'm going to eat a double double. Mm-hmm.
That's fucking hilarious. It's crazy. Like it's always gnarly. Now I have to ask you something though. You being in a pirate show, and I am one of the few people who's aware of your spot on impression of Captain Jack Sparrow. How often are you forced to do that impression when you do those shows?
I don't do it at all.
Really?
I don't do it at all because the show has its own storyline, has nothing to do with Disney or anything. So
no, of course. I'm talking about when you're just chatting with the audience after this. Do you meet with the audience after the show?
Yeah. So we take pictures and stuff like that after the show. And we interact a lot in the show, like before the show, like we talk to the audience a lot. But I think it, for me personally, as an actor as well, like, cause I am an actor too. I'm not just a stunt performer. So I'm an actor. So I've created like my own character for this guy. That's not necessarily based off of anything. It's not Jack Sparrow because it's pirates. And even though I do a really good Jack Sparrow impression, I don't do it because it's like, this is a different guy. This is a different type of pirate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and of course.
I what was that?
And you're sticking to the role when you're talking to the audience. Of course, that makes perfect.
Yeah. I'm sticking to the role. And I want to create something that's my own. You know what I mean? That's new. Kind of how like Johnny Depp created Jack Sparrow. I'm creating Antonio. I'm creating this new character, this new type of pirate. It's like, oh, we don't know who this guy is. And that's going to get you as the audience member to potentially like me, hopefully, or hate me. You never know. I'm sure the other colors, I'm sure the orange pirate crew hates the yellow pirate. You know, I've created my own take and have created my own type of pirate in this pirate world, I guess you could say.
Nice.
But, yeah, man, it's a lot of fun. It's a fun show. And obviously,
would you go back to it when COVID's over?
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. Yeah. I would go back. It's a great year round show. It's a lot of fun.
Do you guys ever do it with hecklers?
What was that?
Do you guys, cause, you know, I only come from when it comes to live performances, stand up is my bag. So I'm curious, do you guys ever deal with hecklers? And what form of people who interrupt the show, what form do those people come into for live stunt performances?
Yes. That's an interesting question. I got to commend you with your stand-up stuff, because I've always wanted to try stand-up, but it honestly terrifies me. I could do improv. I could do stunt shows. Stand-up? That's scary as shit to me. It's a completely different animal, dude. I'd rather fall 30 feet head first into a mat than get up and do stand-up, bro.
I know so many stunt actors, and you have all told me that, and the whole time I'm like, I don't know, like I think something's wrong, like wrong with your wiring if you think what I do is scary. I mean, yeah, it's nerve-wracking in its own way, but like I'll take going on stage talking about my dick than jumping off of a goddamn roof. No way, you got this harness, and there's a net down there. You're totally safe. Fuck off, sir. I don't need...
Well, yeah, dude, I'm telling you. I don't know what it is. It's just scary, dude. I've seen your shows. I've been to your shows. I've been to stand-up shows. And trust me, I've wanted to try it. There's a part of me that wants to try it. But at the same time, I'm like, fuck that, dude. I don't know why it's so scary to me. It just looks terrifying.
People, because it's attuned to public speaking, and
I'm cool with public speaking, but when I'm expected to tell a joke and when I'm expected to have it be funny, I'm like, yo, I can't promise that. What I can promise you is me falling into a fucking net 30 feet up in the air and living to tell about it. Yeah. That I can promise you. I can't promise you my joke's going to be funny or that you're going to enjoy it.
If there's one thing I can always suggest, because I think everyone should try doing stand-up once. It's like when people do, it's like when the, you know, people have their bucket list of like, and they go skydiving.
Oh, and, yeah, dude, yes.
Which you've done, which you're insane. Yeah,
I have a story about that too, actually, I'll tell you about.
Oh, yeah, please do. Sure. But like, let me just say this just so I can try to convince you to do stand-up. You know, it's after you do it, it's a great feeling, like you did it, it's done, you can mark that off. Because, yeah, chances, the worst thing that's going to happen is that no one laughs. That's the worst thing that can happen in that scenario. And honestly, if it's your first time doing stand-up, the likelihood of no one laughing is surprisingly high. So when you get the chuckle, if you get one good chuckle out of them, it feels like an achievement, and almost always you're going to have a very welcoming crowd because everyone's going to know you've never done stand up before. So like, I think it's definitely worth the attempt. Come on, bruh, come to Vegas, out with me. Come to Vegas, hang out with me. I'll take you and you'll do a 3 minutes. You just do 3 minutes.
And 3 minutes is a long time, dude. I used to box and I used to spar. So I know what 3 minutes in a ring is, and that is a lifetime, dude. It may not sound like a lot, but 3 minutes.
Yeah, 3 minutes. Boxing is a good example of bombing. I will admit that boxing is a good example of bombing. Like, oh, it's only 3 minutes. You ever got your ass beat for 3 minutes? It's a long time.
It takes forever, dude. It really does.
Where the fuck is the bell?
Exactly. Where's the bell? When is it going to ring? Exactly. And yeah, that's what I'm saying. So 3 minutes up on stage, just trying to tell jokes. That sounds fucking terrifying. I don't know how you do it, man. Major kudos to you and everybody else that does stand up and even tries it. And yeah, who knows? Maybe there will be a day when I try stand up. Maybe I'll try to jot some jokes down or something. See, and that's, I think that's the weird part for me personally. I feel like if I ever did stand up, I would feel more comfortable and easy if I just went up there and improvised the whole thing, which I've heard is not the way to go. it's not the way to go. And
Some guys do it. Some guys just feel more confident in the improv. They'll have like maybe like three strong jokes, like beginning comics. They'll like have three strong jokes or jokes they've written, and then they'll just riff in between each joke. And they'll let their charisma carry them the rest of the way.
Yeah. That sounds a little bit easier for me personally. And go again, maybe it. That's, maybe that's because I'm more comfortable with improv. Like I said, I've done a lot of improv. I like talking, but when I go up there, like I can't. If you're like, tell me a joke, I'm like, dude, I don't fucking know. I don't know. I hate that feeling. Like people, like, oh, you're a funny guy. You're a funny guy. Tell me a fucking joke. It's like, oh shit, who are you, fucking Joe Pesci? Yeah. Like, you know what
people
I mean? Like,
tell me all the fucking time. It's like one of the most annoying goddamn things. Right? Anyway, like. Every time it's like, oh, you're a comedian? Tell me a joke. Fuck off, dude.
Yeah, it's exactly. That's what I'm saying. And I guess I feel that way if I go up on stage to do stand-up. Like, I feel like I'm expected to deliver a funny-ass joke. And I can't promise that. You know what I mean? I can't promise you that I'm going to last 20 minutes in bed. I can't promise you that. It's probably not going to happen.
Like, there's an expectation.
Exactly. They have these expectations.
Oh, man. But yeah, you were telling me that you've gone skydiving. Well, you had a story for that.
I have. I've gone skydiving twice, actually. And it's funny. So the first time I ever went skydiving, I actually went solo. So I didn't go tandem. I didn't go strapped to anybody.
I didn't know that they would allow that. I thought that was like something that you had to go tandem.
You'd think, right? Well, there's a loophole. There's ways. If you have the money, there's ways. So what happened was one of my buddies, it was his his 24th or 25th birthday, and he always wanted to go skydiving. So his dad bought me, him, and his girlfriend at the time skydiving. And he didn't really tell us about it. He didn't tell us too much about it. He just said, "We're gonna go skydiving." I'm like, "Okay." And yeah, like you, I was thinking, cool, I'll probably be strapped to somebody, tandem, and we'll jump out of a plane. And I'm thinking this, I'm like, yeah, that already sounds terrifying to me. Because personally, like, I like roller coasters and stuff, but I hate the drop type stuff, like Supreme Scream at Knott's Berry Farm. Or like stuff like that, the free fall type rides. I hate that. I hate feeling the butterfly stomach drop feeling in your stomach. It's the worst. I hate it. So I'm thinking like, oh man, this is gonna be like, again, 3 minutes of hell, like just falling. You know what I mean? And I'm gonna have to endure this weird sensation in my stomach for a long time, and I was not looking forward to it. But it was my buddy's birthday. I was like, all right, I'm gonna do it. So we get there, we drive out to Paris, California, not Paris, France, Paris, California, where they have Paris skydiving. And we get there super early in the morning, probably like 6 a.m. And he's like, all right, I have another surprise for you. Just so you know, you guys aren't doing tandem, you're going solo. And I'm thinking, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, I had to jump out of this plane by ourselves? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, how, again, like you said, how is that even possible? I thought I had to go tandem or something, like take some classes or do something, right? Before somebody allows me to jump out of an airplane, a moving airplane at 13,000 feet for the first time. Like, there's got to be some protocol to this. Well, what you can do if you pay enough money. You paid a lot of money, obviously. It's the first step in the process to become a certified skydiver. So what happens is he I we had to take like it was like a 7 hour class from 7 a.m. to about like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. We took this long class, and basically, it was me, my buddy, a couple other random people, and then my buddy's girlfriend at the time. And we did this class, and they explained, like everything about it, the geometry of falling and stuff, and the physics, and how to look at the ground from an aerial view. What to avoid, wind direction, all these different things that go into play for skydiving. Basically gets crammed into a 7 hour class.
Ugh.
Then they take you into a wind tunnel, with like an indoor skydiving thing, and they teach you technique with your body, how to place your body, where to move, how if you curl up into a ball, what does it do? If you spread out, what does it do? Like all these different physical techniques of what to do with your body. And so you do that like a couple times, literally like 2 times. Then you go back to the classroom and do all this, and you do more basically in class work of skydiving. At the end of this class, you have to take a test. You have to take a written test, and you have to pass with 100% before you can jump. Once you take the test and you pass with 100%, you're basically cleared to jump solo.
Oof.
Then, after that, once you've been cleared to jump solo, they take you into this room where they have basically harnesses hanging from the ceiling. And they put you in these harnesses, just like a parachute, and you're strapped in and everything. And they stand in front of you. And by the way, they're not joking around. Like they straight up tell you at the beginning of the class, they're like, hey, like, we know this is gonna be a lot of fun and everything, but at the same time, this is serious because you're about to save your own life. And I'm just like, what? Like, why you gotta say it like that? But you're right. They're right, though. Like, I am. Like, I have to be the one to pull my chute. And if anything goes wrong, it's on me. Like, it's not on anybody else. It's on me. And they're dead serious. Like, we don't want no games in here. We're not here to fuck around. This is serious. And it's like, oh, shit. Like, this is serious. And it's it's freaky. But so they take – so after all that stuff, once you're in the harness in this room, these harnesses are strapped to the ceiling. They'll hold up pictures. And the pictures are of what the parachute looks like. So they'll hold up a parachute. And they'll be like, if you look up, if you pull your chute and you look up and you see this, what do you do? And then you have to physically do it, like, in this harness. It's a real harness, but it's strapped to the ceiling. You know what I mean? And you have to show them what you would have to physically do. Now, just pulling your reserve chute, it doesn't work like that. You don't just pull your reserve chute. Like, there's steps to do.
Oh, my God.
As you're falling thousands of feet in the air, this is not how it is in the movies where you just pull a reserve chute like on your side. No, dude, no. You have to detach from your main chute, go back into free fall, then you have to pull a safety, and then you pull your reserve chute. Now, mind you, these are steps that you got to do while you're looking up thinking, wow, my parachute has a rip in it and I'm going to die. Now I have to detach myself from this crappy parachute that's not working, go back into a free fall, and then have time to pull my reserve chute again. That's kind of scary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of scary.
Oh, my God. That's... So, no.
I know, right?
Who the fuck is this friend of yours?
He's one of my best friends from high school, actually. He's getting married soon, but it's funny. He's a pilot now. Really cool dude. And yeah, he loves flying and stuff. But this was back in the day. And well, and so this is, mind you, this is like level one before you can get certified to be like a skydiver, to do it on your own. So when I did it, I did have two instructors on the side of me kind of guiding me, and like if anything happened, like they would be there just in case. But at 5,000 feet, I wave them off and I pull my chute. I'm on my own. I had an earpiece in my ear where they could talk to me, but I couldn't talk to them. So and here's the thing, most accidents with skydiving happens when the chute is opened. It's not when you're falling. It's when the chute is open is when 90% of accidents happen.
Oh, wow. That is something I did not need to know.
Yeah, most people don't. And that's why they would hold up these images of parachutes, because there's so many things that can go wrong with a parachute. It's not that you're just falling. That's not what's going to kill you. So you'll be in free fall, and then you basically, let's say you pull your chute and you look up and there's a rip in the chute. Okay, well, the rip in the chute, it's not going to have as much lift. You know what I mean? So it's not going to slow you down. So you got to detach, do all this stuff, pull your reserve, and then it goes. Well, that's just one scenario. You could pull your chute and it could not even come out. You know what I mean? Like, oh, shit. Okay, so now you just go right to your reserve chute. You know what I mean? There's another scenario. There's another scenario where it can get tangled up. You pull your chute, it's all twisted up and tangled up. But there's different things that you have to do. So you're not just going to detach from your main chute because it's tangled up. There's a technique where you basically egg beat your legs and you untangle. You can untangle the wires. You know what I mean? Or not the wires, but the strings or rope or whatever it is. And you'll untwist yourself and then you'll be good to go. And so you don't have to detach. You know what I mean? You could pull your chute and it just be the wires. I'm going to call them wires. The wires could get tangled up in the chute and then the chute doesn't actually open up and deploy normally or naturally like it should. So then you're still falling at an accelerated speed. What do? You got to detach, stay in free fall, and then pull. Once you get to a certain amount, and by the way, when all this is happening, you have an altimeter on your wrist. So you have to constantly be monitoring your altitude as you're falling, because there's a point of no return point. Ugh. Where if you don't, or if you do pull your chute below a certain point, you're coming down hard, because even with a chute open, dude, you're coming down fast and you're coming down hard. Like, even if you pull your chute and you don't pull back and like go against the wind to slow yourself down as you're coming down to land, you can easily break your legs. Like, yeah, you have a parachute, but you're still coming down at probably 20 to 30 miles an hour. Like, you're coming down fast. So there's techniques and things that you need to know and learn when you're skydiving. Like, it's a whole thing. And then on top of that, not crossing the runway, being aware of planes flying around, because think about it, you're in the air. It's not like a street where you could see like cars coming and whatnot. You're in the air, dude. There's other airplanes up there flying around. And if you're falling, a plane may not see you and then just hit you in midair, which has happened. The guy, one of my instructor told me a story about that happened to him, where it was a newer pilot, and at this place, they have the runway and areas of where the pilots need to specifically fly, and they have a drop point. And so the air should be clear within the drop point area, because people, this is a skydiving place, right? Like, this is what it's meant for.
Yeah.
Well, mistakes happen sometimes, obviously. And apparently somebody had flown through that area where they're skydiving. And as you're falling, they give you hand signals, because you can't hear anything because you're falling hundreds of miles an hour. Like, you're falling, like, I think you're falling at about 115 to 120 miles an hour. That's how fast you're going. So you can't hear anything. Like, it just sounds like that. You can't hear anything. So what they do is they give you hand signals, and they'll be like, spread your legs, and it'll be like a two on their finger, but like spread out, like put them together. It'll be like a two put together on their finger. So they're telling you all these different things of what to do through hand signals, basically, because you can't communicate verbally. And I don't remember exactly what the hand signal was, but there's a hand signal that they give you to, like, it doesn't matter. He's like, if you see this hand signal, I don't care if we're at 10,000, I don't care if we're at 8,000, I don't care if we're at 5,000. Because 5,000 is the point where you have to pull your chute, at least for us, for people that are like learning. Like, you have to pull your chute at 5,000 feet. Nothing below that. And I think the point of no return is like 1,500 or 2,000 feet. It's something like that, where it's like, you pass that, it's like, you're going to get fucked up or die. So basically, he was like, if you see this signal, he's like, I don't care how high we are or what altitude we're at, if we're not at 5,000 feet, you pull your chute as soon as you see this. I was like, okay. And he told me the story. There was a story where a plane was in the no-fly zone where they were skydiving and was coming right through. And if he didn't tell that guy to pull his chute, or if he didn't pull the chute, boom, would have hit him, because the plane was flying through.
Wow.
And it happens. People get hit midair, just poof, out of nowhere, just boom, airplane hits you. You think getting hit by a car sucks? Imagine a double engine plane.
It's just so amazing that scenario could even happen.
Oh, I know, dude. When he told me that, I was like, I ain't even scared about hitting the ground now. I'm worried about freaking rogue planes flying through our drop zone now.
Oh my God.
So it happens. You know what I mean? So there's
a, yeah, because so many people can just own planes, you know?
Yeah.
I remember. I remember hearing like Henry Rollins talk about a story where he thought he was on a flight to get to a gig, and he got a charter flight service, but turning out it wasn't a charter flight. It was just some guy who cleans up charter planes, and his agent didn't know. And he was a big fan of Henry Rollins, so he just grabbed his plane to pick him up. And,
no way.
Yeah, and flew him like about
2/3 of the way until they ran out of gas. Because he, you know, and none of the planes up there really knew where they were, because it was in the middle of the night.
Oh, dude, flying at night is ridiculous. And especially for somebody who's not a pilot, that's kind of impressive that he was able to manage that. So my buddy who I went skydiving with, he's a pilot. When he was still learning, like he had passed his tests and everything, but you have to log like a certain amount of hours, right? Like that's the idea. Once you get, it's kind of like driving a car, you know what I mean? You get your permit and then like for a certain amount of time, you can't drive with people in the car. But then after that, you know what I mean? It's kind of similar, but like he could fly with people in the plane. So there's one time me and him, he was like, hey, we're going to go fly. Like I got to log some hours. You want to come with me? I was like, yeah, dude, let's go fly around. So we get a Cessna and we're over here at John Wayne Airport in Orange County. And he's like, we're just going to fly around over the ocean and come back. I was like, all right, cool. But it was kind of at dusk. So the sun was kind of going down. And we flew from Dana Point, Santa Ana, Irvine area, all the way to like Dana Point in like 10 minutes, right? It wasn't even that long at all. We're driving, that's going to take you about 45 minutes. Flying takes you like 10 minutes, like 15 minutes. It took like no time at all. Well, coming back, it started to get dark. And sorry about this. Again, if he just does maintenance on the planes, I'm again surprised how he even flew, because that stuff's not easy. Like, flying a plane is not easy by any means. Like, it's not some freaking simulator on PS4. You know what I mean? Like, this ain't no flight simulator. Like,
yeah,
it's completely different. My buddy, he was like, hey, you want to try steering? And I was like, yeah, sure. So like I took the wheel. He's like, just bank right. And I was like, okay. And I turned it like a car, because I didn't know any better. Again, I don't want to fly. I've never taken any classes. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to bank right and turn right. And I'm thinking like on video games, like, you know, throw me into an X-Wing on Battlefront 2. Like, I'm down, dude. I'll take you out. But a Cessna? Nope. I turned right just like normal, like driving a car. We dropped 400 feet.
Fuck that.
Because I didn't pull back. I didn't give the aircraft lift. Because if you turn, the airflow changes. It's not being lifted anymore. You know what I mean? So you have to like turn and pull back and like use the pedals and shit and like do all these other things just to make a normal turn.
Why the fuck did he just give you the wheel?
Because you thought it was funny. And I turned and I'm not thinking anything of it. I'm just like, I'm just turning. He's like, and he takes it back. He's like, dude, we just dropped 400 feet. I'm like, what? How? He's like, you didn't pull back. I'm like, you didn't tell me that I had to pull back, dude. You know, but I guess this is common knowledge for people that have taken the class. Not for me. I was like, I've never flown a plane before. Like, I didn't think of that. It never crossed my mind. So anyway, like, yeah, that happened. And then we're going back to the airport. And this is like at the beginning. Of like he already has his license and everything for like single engines and like Cessnas and stuff. Now he does like commercial planes, like the big ass jets. But like at the time, we were going back, and this is kind of his training and learning and everything still, you know. But he was authorized to fly people and fly on his own and stuff to log hours. We're going back. Dude, from the sky at night, and I'm sure you've looked, if you've been in a plane at nighttime, if you look outside out the window at nighttime, it all looks the same, dude.
Yeah.
Like the lights, the cars, the roads, it all looks the same. And so we got lost trying to find the runway.
Oh, the fuck.
We're like going back, and we're like, he even asked me, he's like, do you know where we are? I'm like, no, dude. I'm like, it literally looks the same. So it became dark. And nighttime fell upon us, and basically everything looked the exact same to me. It's just dark with just lights on the ground. I'm like, I don't know if that's the 405. I don't know what freeway that is. I don't know what that is. Like, I'm not used to seeing Orange County from above. Not at You know what I mean? Like, I have no idea. It all looks the same. And even the air traffic controller, he had called in. He's like, coming in, you know, and he got lost too. My buddy was just like, I don't know where the runway is. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know where the runway is, man? This is your job. I'm just here for the ride along to keep you company up here. He's like, I know. He's like, I'm trying to find the runway. I'm like,
fucking hey.
He's like, let me know if you see the runway. I was like, yeah, you know, no, I thought I'd keep it to myself. You know what I mean? Like, damn.
Like you know, getting my Where's Waldo. Oh, I see it. Do you? I'm going to keep this to me.
There's the one way. I'm not going to tell the pilot. We're running out of gas. Ha, ha, ha. Don't tell him where the one way is, guys. So anyway, we're flying around, like, looking for the runway. And even the air traffic controller, like, lost us at some point. He's like, where are you guys? And we're like, we don't know. We're trying to find the runway. And he starts laughing. The air traffic controller starts laughing. And then we finally got picked back up on his radar and whatnot. But, like, I mean, eventually we made it down. But it's a flying and skydiving is a weird feeling. But you know, going back to like skydiving, when I was falling, that's the other thing, like you're doing work as you're falling for like your first time. Like like if you haven't done like 30 jumps or like more than that, or like 50 jumps or 100 jumps, you're working, dude. I had to go up there. I'm in the plane. Every 1,000 feet or every 2,000 feet, I had to tell my instructors, like, what do we do now? What do we do this? What does this mean? What do we do? What is this? I was like, oh, dude, I'm just trying to figure out how to survive, bro. Like, that's all I'm, like, really worried about. You know what I mean? Like, you're telling me all this technical stuff. I'm like, I just want to be able to pull my – all I'm worried about right now and all I'm wanting is that my chute opens up. That's what I'm worried about. You know what I mean? Like, I have no issues. So we jump out, and you know what's funny? I'll send it to you. There's actually a YouTube video of this, of my jump. It's on YouTube. And so I jump out of the plane, and the entire time I'm looking at my altimeter, like, all right, we're at this point. He's giving me hand signals. I'm just working the whole time. I couldn't really, like, enjoy it. You know what I mean? Because I was so worried about all the things that I had to do.
Yeah.
Like, as I'm falling. Again, it was like work to me. And that weird feeling, that stomach feeling, the butterflies, you don't get that. You only get that for like a little bit at the beginning. When you see the plane leave, when you exit the plane and you're falling upside down backwards and you see the plane just keep going, you're fucking falling. You get it for like 2 seconds and then it goes away because you're moving so fast. And I have a couple friends that are like professional skydivers and do a bunch of like stunt things for skydiving and like movies and stuff. A couple years ago, I worked at Comic-Con, did the Batman experience, and it was like an indoor skydiving virtual reality experience thing that was dope for Batman's 80th anniversary. And the company that we had come in and do the skydiving stuff, these guys were like insane skydivers and insane trickers, and they have like this traveling like indoor skydiving tunnel thing, and they were telling me, and they kept trying to get me back out there. They're like, you got to come back out with us and jump with us, we teach you and all this stuff. I'm like, you know, it sounds great, but at the same time it sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like these guys have been jumping for years. Skydiving's fun. I'd definitely go again, but tandem. You know what I mean? So like the second time I went, I went tandem, which was a lot more enjoyable because I got to enjoy it and not have to worry. I didn't have to work. I was just strapped to some dude and I let him do all the work, and I could just enjoy just falling and looking around and enjoy the experience. Because that's the thing. When I pulled my chute at 5,000 feet, I was in control, man. And those controlling it and like turning, those things are sensitive, bro. I remember at one point, because I had never done this before. All I've heard was like through like word of mouth on the ground through like this class. And so I go to make a turn and I pull on the string, like little handles or whatever that help you like control. It's like a big ass kite, basically. Dude, I pulled this thing so hard because I wasn't sure. I almost did a flip, dude. And so imagine being like in a roller coaster. You're like, you know how that feeling in a roller coaster? You know what I mean? But imagine being able to control the roller coaster. Like, that's what it feels like. And your legs are just hanging off, dude. You're like 5,000 feet up in the air, just hanging on a big ass fucking kite. And you're controlling it. And I think sensitive, and it flips, and it turns, and it skyrockets, it drops. It's like, yeah, it's a roller coaster, dude.
Oof.
It's interesting. It's a lot of fun, but it's terrifying. If you ever go have you ever been skydiving?
Nope.
You should definitely do it. I highly suggest doing it tandem first. If you're a crazy person like me, then go for the solo first time. And that was the second time I'd ever been in an airplane.
Oh my God.
So the second time I'd ever been in an airplane, I jumped out of it.
Oh my God. That's, you know what, man? I'm cool.
I'd rather do that than get up on a stage and try to tell a joke.
Oh my God. So you had two doors to walk through. Like, look, you can do skydiving one more time, or you can get on stage and do a solid 5 minutes. You're going to go on the plane?
Probably, yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, brother. That was a great story, man. Oh my God. Oh my God, that's you're crazy. You're just straight crazy.
Yeah, I am. I am. It's interesting. Yeah, it's weird. Like you said, there's something wired in our brains for like stunt performers that.
Oh yeah.
It's definitely the adrenaline. You know what I mean? There's a lot of, and don't get me wrong, I definitely get terrified and scared at times, but. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling after, which I'm sure is the exact same feeling after you do a really good set of stand up.
Mm.
It's this feeling of like you could do anything and accomplish anything.
That is a feeling that definitely happens. You feel like you can conquer the world after a good set, you know? Right.
Yeah. It's that same feeling.
Yeah.
You come down, you land from falling 13,000 feet. You're like, I could do anything. You know what I mean? You do a crazy stunt. You do a high fall from 40 feet. You feel like you could do anything. It's that adrenaline. And I'm sure it's that same chemical in the brains that's activated. You know what I mean? I guess it's as different per person as far as like what specifically triggers that chemical. And how you obtain it. You know, for you, it's being up on stage, telling jokes, and getting laughs for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. What's the longest set you've ever had doing telling jokes?
I headlined for like 40 minutes.
Damn, dude. That's...
The 30 to 45, 30, like some people do hours. I haven't gotten an hour set yet. I've been booked for an hour set. But yeah, it was a 40-minute set. Most of the time when I get booked, I'm in the 20 to 35 minute area. That's usually, you know, if I'm a feature and the occasional headlining gig, the headlining gigs I've gotten, they're like 30 minutes long.
Yeah. That's still a long time, dude. That's what I'm saying. Like we were saying earlier.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah. Bombing headlining. I'm grateful I've never bombed when I've headlined, but just bombing at a featured spot, which has happened to me, and that's 15 to 20 minutes. That is a long time to sink.
Yeah, dude, that's a really long time. And I don't know people, whoever's listening to this, like you, if you've never been up on stage, time slows down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you're not really relevant of time. It's just you're not worried about that, and because of that, it feels like it goes way slower.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and sometimes it feels like it goes faster. Sometimes you could probably do a set, and this is how it's like for me with like shows and everything. It's like, oh dang, we're already at this part. Okay, you know, like you don't really think about it once you get to that point. But there's definitely times I'm just like, dude, how are we only right here?
The better it goes, the faster it goes.
Right. Exactly.
And I think it's because of your state of mind. You're not even, you're just, everything's just hit. Like for comedy, it's like, oh my God, what a, when you have like a beautiful crowd and every joke not only lands, it lands spectacularly. You riff with a audience member. They're loving it. Everyone's having a great time. And, you know, and then next thing I know, I see the light. I was like, holy shit, it's already been 13 minutes. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I got to wrap up. I got to do the last bit. Or like, and the times I've headlined, you know, and the guy's giving me the light. I was like, really? It's only been fucking, like, really?
Yeah.
But then there's times where it's not going well. And you're like, where the fuck is the light, guys?
Like, for the love of God, somebody just give me the light already. Let me see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, yeah. Like, I swear, if people who have listened to this, if you've ever gone to a comedy show and the comic is just not doing well, maybe you don't find them funny, but a significant enough people in the audience have not found them funny. And then just randomly, they say, oh, thank God. That is because at that moment, he just got the light. That's why it's like the light, the 1 minute light or the 2 minute, whatever the show's doing. But basically, you can now start wrapping it up. And like that shit can be a savior. Yeah. Times where you're bombing.
I've experienced. I'm not personally on stage, but as an audience member, like you said, the oh thank God. I've experienced that at comedy shows before. I don't remember specifically who it was, but I went and saw Joe Rogan do stand up, and he had a couple people before him, like open up and stuff. And there was a guy that. Just nobody, he couldn't get anybody. Like, oof. it just wasn't his cup of tea that night, or maybe it wasn't his crowd, or I couldn't tell you specifically what it was. But if he's opening for Joe Rogan, like,
yeah, he had to have some level of skill. He had to have impressed somebody to be able to open for him. I mean, like, every so often, randomly, there might be the odd duck who gets the hookup. But 99% of the time, if you're opening for a big name, it's because you've impressed someone who has authority.
Right, exactly. And exactly. Like he he's impressed somebody. He's got some form of skill set. But again, maybe it was just that crowd at that venue that day.
He could have had an off night. He didn't read the crowd well.
We're doing it. And he said that he was like, oh, thank God. Like he was so relieved that he was done with his set.
Yeah. I remember there's this. Go ahead.
No, I was saying it's just, and I feel like a lot of times, well, at least for this instance, like usually like the host or the person coming on next kind of references the person that just left.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to. You have to acknowledge the bombing that has just happened.
Yeah.
If you respect the other guy enough, if you like him, you'll do it in a playful, joking manner. But it's an easy way to get the crowd back on your side because the crowd is very aware of what just happened. And ignoring it is a bad idea. So you always want to, you know.
Exactly. We all witnessed it. Everybody in this auditorium witnessed the bombing of this guy.
Oh, yeah. There's a show. I'm 100% positive it's coming back. And I've talked about it before on the show. It's a show called The Hilarious Seven. Hands down, one of my favorite local shows since I moved out here. And it has a very interesting format. Their whole gimmick is comedy for people with a short attention span. And it's seven comics doing 10 minutes each.
Interesting.
And they have a big timer on. And the, you know, so like it counts them down. So the comic has to make sure they end at exactly 10 minutes or else there's a big blowhorn that, you know, the lights flicker and everything. It's a cool, cute little gimmick.
Yeah.
And I've lost count how many times I've been on the show. And most comics in this town who, like, if you're funny and you can get, if you're a bookable funny guy, you've been on the show. And you've been in the rotation. And every single one of us have bombed at some point doing that show. And
So you have to do a 10-minute set?
It's exactly 10 minutes. Oh, exactly God. 10 minutes. And so, oh, dude.
And you can see the clock.
You can see the clock. You can, if you look over.
So the audience can see the clock, too.
Audience can see the clock. You're all aware. And if you're doing your job, no one notices the clock. If you're doing your job right, they're focusing on you and you're having a great time.
Oh, my God.
But,
that already gives me anxiety.
Oh, bro.
I can just see it now. Like, if I'm up there and I look back and be like, it's only been 2 minutes?
Yeah, like, like so many comics have done jokes about, like, when they're bombing. It was like, you never really realize how long 10 minutes is until fucking.
Yeah.
And I remember this one night. I always talk about him. He's a hilarious comic. I love this guy. His name is Garrett Hall. And he and a bunch of comics, I know a few comics that have been on my show, were performing that night. I wasn't performing that day. I was just hanging out. And you could not buy a laugh that night. Everyone was just eating shit. Every comic. And like, it was a older crowd, older, white, looks very conservative crowd. And Garrett is like, leading up, is like, Garrett's like the sixth comic, fifth or sixth comic up. And we're like, ooh, Garrett, you're gonna do fine. He's like, no, man, I know what I gotta do. I got him. And I was like, oh, yeah? He's like, yeah, I know this crowd, man. You know, I'm just gonna go up there, talk about my military service, and they'll get the claps, and I can start going in into the crowd. They'll be on my, because guys, Air Force,
right?
Okay. And he goes up there, talks about his service, fucking nothing. No one claps. No one does shit for him. Mm. And we're like, fuck, that is almost a guaranteed applause break. Like someone says, like, you know, I've served in, you know, the Marine for 12 years. Right. I'm a veteran. And everyone's like, yeah. Thank you for your service. This crowd. This crowd could give a fuck.
No. It's like,
I was like, fuck me. And then, of course, just like everyone else, long 10 minutes.
And this is in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, you know, crowds are very different. Vegas crowds, it's just different. You know, you're dealing with tourists. There's tourists.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you never know. What kind of crowd you're going to get. Generally, they're like, get to the punchline real quick. They won't fuck. They won't hang out for setup. They want that quick punchline.
Right.
For No. Like L.A., you can spend like some L.A. It's interesting. So many comics I've seen who come out of Vegas had a harder time building up their hour in Vegas, as opposed to LA comics, really? Who are more, because LA comics tend to get long sets. Even when you're on the amateur level, you get long sets. But at the same time, though, LA crowds are willing to listen to you for a lot longer period of time till you get to the punchline. For some reason, I don't know. But
interesting.
Yeah, crowds are different depending on where you go. That's always the case. And so the more travel comic can do very well anywhere they go, because they are a little bit more accustomed. But even then, shit happens. You know, like, who the fuck knows sometimes?
I think that's, like, the most fun thing, at least to me anyway, when it comes to, like, live performance stuff, is you don't know what's going to happen.
You have an idea. There's, you know, like, if everything goes right, everyone laughs, everyone has a good time, high fives all around, and we all leave. And sometimes it's like, oh, holy fuck.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happens.
Yeah. But brother, we've been talking for over an hour. And
At that. I didn't even realize.
Man, when it's going well, you don't realize the time. So like, I want people to follow you. I want people to, you know, know more about you, because you're one of the most interesting people I know. How should people find you?
Yeah. So I have Instagram, obviously. Shane_the_train, which is my nickname that was given to me, and I just kind of ran with it. But so we got Shane the Train on Instagram, and then same thing with TikTok is Shane_the_train. I'm on there as well. Me and my buddies have another podcast that we do. It's on Spotify, if you don't mind if I shout that out.
Please do.
The Pie Guys, actually. It's called The Pie Guys on Spotify. And it's basically what we do is just we smoke a little, we talk, we eat a pie, a pizza or a pie, and we kind of review it. Like, it could be super random. And then we talk about just anything from video games to comics to movies to dating to whatever. There's really no specific genre necessarily, but that's on Spotify. But yeah, so there's a few platforms that you can find me on.
Awesome. And it's the Pie Guys, right?
The Pie Guys, yeah. And then great, Shane guys. _ the Train on Instagram and TikTok.
Well, there you have it. Shane the Train and Pie Guys, y'all. Gotta follow them. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna be on Pie Guys eventually.
You are gonna be on Pie Guys 110%, dude.
Oh man, I can't wait.
We got some things we gotta talk about on there with comic books and movies and whatnot.
Oh dude, that's my world.
I know it is.
I'll go hardcore geek.
That's exactly what we want. I'm in the process of playing The Last of Us right now.
Ooh, great game.
It is. I'm part one, because I'm the last of us to ever play this game series, apparently. My girlfriend is like, you haven't played The Last of Us yet? What's wrong with you? She has a British accent. That's why I did that weird accent.
Hot.
I'm just not good at it. But
yeah, man, that's a great game. It's one of the best games that came out during that time.
So far, where I'm at, the writing and the story. I mean, I've always loved Naughty Dog, anyway. So, I know I'm gonna enjoy this game,
dude. Man, let me know when you get to the ending, man. It's just gonna fuck you up.
That's what I keep hearing, dude. But I'll let you know.
All right, y'all. Well, that's Tell Me a Story. Thank y'all. Go. Good night.
Have a good one.
And that's the show. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to giving you guys more stories, more guests. You guys keep on listening. Our numbers are growing every week, and it's thanks to you guys. So please continue to like, share, subscribe. If you want to support other ways, you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook. My handle is Bell Comedy. That's also my Cash App handle, $BellComedy, one word, if you want to support other ways. We will have a Patreon up that'll be a little bit easier for you guys to directly donate. And thank you for listening to Tell Me a Story. Love y'all. Bye.